buyers need to remind themselves that they really can't make a big mistake in LA, whether they buy at the price the seller's asking for or $25,000 more or whatever. It's like, you're going to win in the long run. The data shows it. That is the only science I back mm-hmm. when it comes to real estate. Mm-hmm. Everything else is just opinions. Yeah, yeah. Courtney, your friends about to show you how to generate wealth. Get educated, do for yourself. Add a couple notches to your belt. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real, real under estate. All is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real, real estate. Coming to you live from Acme Real Estate in Los Angeles, California. Welcome to a new season of Under All is the Land, Season 4, Episode 1. I'm your host, Courtney Polis. Here with my rock star co-stars, Silke Fernald.
Hello.
And Dominique Madden.
Hi.
So, y'all, the market has changed. I know we've been like kind of like talking about it as time has gone on, but now I'm starting to see like evidence of it in patterns, repeated behavior by buyers, by sellers, and by agents. So I thought today our topic could be who wins? Like, how do you win in this market if you're a buyer, if you're a seller, or if you're an agent? Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys down?
Let's do it.
Okay. So let's start with buyers. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of clients who are writing losing offers. You?
Go. Yes.
Yeah? Yes. Like knowingly writing losing offers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're just going to throw some stuff against the wall and see what sticks.
So there's still an idea that there's a deal to be had.
Yeah. That's what mm-hmm. I think. I think that people are still subscribing to, you know, like the talk that applied to, you know, last year or even like the beginning of this year to an extent, but they're not really, until they're being beat out several times, seeing that the market has shifted and that more people are back out. So it's like they want to challenge that.
Mm-hmm. Right, so here's what I mean when I say the market has shifted. So before it was just a straight seller's market, we knew it, interest rates were lower, buyers were in multiples on every house, right? Mm-hmm. Then the interest rates tick up, buyers are seeing the news headlines saying the market's softening. Some buyers jump out, smart buyers stay in, but they see like maybe there were some deals to be had. And I will admit that around the holidays, there are always some deals to be had. I buy almost all of my houses around like between Thanksgiving and December because that's when sellers who have had their properties on for a very long time are like maybe more flexible and buyers are distracted and whatever. Anyway, my point is, you can't misconstrue that softening with necessarily a softening overall of the market that's going to last. It is a seasonal softening at best, as we can see by what's picked up in the spring. Mm-hmm. So yes, that goes from like November, December to January. Mm-hmm. And then February comes along and even when interest rates are at 6%, people are figuring out ways to get relationship discounts with different lenders than we would have recommended before, probably. First Republic's rates have gone up, for example, so, you know, we're not getting those Eagle program rates, but Bank of the West and other banks are now offering these relationship discounts that allow people to move money and get some off their interest rates, so they're figuring out a way to still buy, and inventory is still surprisingly low in mm-hmm. most places that people in LA want to buy, so you're still seeing multiple offers. And I just think that the buyers who are not winning are the ones who are still under the impression that they have some power in the pricing. Because I just think that's so realistic. Offers are just, you know, my buyers are writing consciously knowing they're going to lose. I mean, that's not winning.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's almost like if you're not going to come to the table and you know that the traffic's going to be there, why? You know, I mean, to an extent, like I feel like if someone's going to come to the table, but maybe they're not prepared to take it all the way, you know, you never know what's going to fall out. And some people put these like super high offers in, you know, just to like try to bid it down and then, you know.
Well, let's talk about that because that's happening more now than before too. So in the previous market, when buyers were just so thrilled to even get the daggone thing into escrow, I feel like they were sticking in because there was a backup right behind them maybe even higher than the accepted offer, mm-hmm. putting pressure on the accepted offer, people were hungry. Mm-hmm. So now it seems like when the buyers win, even in a multiple offer scenario, they still feel like they're overpaying potentially, and they're not as willing to stick in, and they still see like maybe there's a better deal to be had around the corner. So they're aggressively negotiating requests for repairs and or canceling on whimsy, and you know, just doesn't seem like they're as committed as they were before in the market, in the previous market. Like, do you see that too?
Yeah, but I also think the last 3-4 months when we had a little bit of a low and some sellers went into panic mode and maybe gave more concessions than they would have in a hot market, and those buyers close escrow and they tell their friends on what they were able to do, and word is getting out that, oh, maybe there's deals to be had. So there's a lot of that where people mm-hmm. just, and then also with the guidance, bad guidance of their agents,
right,
who like to sometimes negotiate against themselves without realizing what they're doing,
right.
That's a perfect storm. So they're still trying, there's not much commitment, they're still trying to get all the things, or getting more that they should have or would have gotten in a hotter market. So it's but I think that's about to, like, we're already, that's switching, like that's changing.
Listen, you know? I think the reality,
you're not getting as much. Sellers don't need to give you everything you're asking right. for. They don't have to sell at a low price.
Right.
We have sellers that, like, I wait for my price and I'll wait and they will get it eventually. Yes. You just got to stick to it.
Right.
Yeah. So that, I think that's just residuals from what happened about 3 months ago when people panic sold the houses for a hot second because everything seemed to be doomsday.
Right. And these comps changed. Still live in our comp set.
Right.
So, and that's sometimes the next thing. Like, we'll send the comps and the buyers will be like, well, why did this good looking house sell for so cheap? And it was sold in like December 28th.
Exactly.
You know? Like, trying to explain.
So you have to do micro comping now.
Yeah, really micro comping.
Like, the last 3 months, not good. Yes. It's like, go back to exactly what closed, like, starting March 1st. Don't look at February.
No, but it's funny because, you know, I've actually seen that appraisers need to be educated. Mm-hmm. The agents who don't operate like daily in the market need to be educated. Like, there are so many people who, if they're not actively working and seeing what's happening like this week, you know, they're still living in last month or 2 months
That's
ago.
That's a great point. And I definitely want to touch on that when we talk about which agents are winning and which are losing right now, because that totally ties into that. Mm-hmm. But as far as buyer mindset is concerned, I was going to say, you know, buyers need to, in order to truly take advantage of any market, they need to be realistic, but also remember that you can't make a mistake in the long term. Not in LA. The property values always go up. Even when people were saying like, when I had, like, during the downturn, obviously, there were a lot of people short selling that didn't even need to. They just jumped on the bandwagon because that's what the media was talking about. And everybody wanted to be a victim of being underwater, not even realizing what that really means. Like, they could have paid their mortgage, but then they felt like they had too high an interest rate, or they felt like they shouldn't because there were all these ways to get out of it.
And how did that work out for them?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, if they would have held on, they would have made money, double the money.
Triple in some areas.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. Buyers need to remind themselves that they really can't make a big mistake in LA, whether they buy at the price the seller's asking for or $25,000 more or whatever. It's like, you're going to win in the long run. The data shows it. That is the only science I back. Mm-hmm. When it comes to real estate, everything else is just opinions. Like, you know, different agents have opinions. We get emails from agents who love to have their opinions. And sometimes the advice that they give is the exact opposite of advice that I would give. You know, like, really, agents have wildly varying opinions on things. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I think we can all agree on is that property appreciates over time. And in Los Angeles, it is especially true, you know? So I think buyers need to brave up a little bit and stop. Like, the buyers who win are the ones who are getting that still. They're still seeing the value in the real estate. They're still understanding the difference. Like, look at my listing on Brynhurst, right? that property is high-end finishes, you know, new like 98% new construction, a beautiful, calm, lovely street, beautiful landscaping, you know, and I've had buyers come at me with all kinds of reasons why they thought the price was too high, when literally steps from there, you're paying 2.3, literally 50 meters, you know, like 2.3 million for a house that's not nearly as beautiful, but is just a little bit more up a hill.
Yeah.
Which I understand, like properties on a hill are gonna have more value, but you know, things like, well, it's next to a daycare. You know, well, it's next to a daycare that is a tiny little daycare that has like no one ever coming or going and no kids running around at all. And if you Google it, you can see that it has, you know, it's like 12 kids, you know, and if you have a kid, you're not offended by kids running around. You understand that people need daycares. And when you have a kid, you realize you need a daycare, and having a daycare next door might be awesome, actually. You know, like it's actually not a bad thing. But even if you ask the neighbors, like, hey, how's the street? How's the, nobody mentions anything disruptive on the street at all.
But these are the questions that they're asking in this market. No one would have asked this question last year, same time. You would have had 15 offers after the first weekend.
Right, right.
So that's the thing.
That's
so
true.
So it's but not a problem.
I don't hate buyers having some power. I just right. want to say that. I'm down with buyers asking the questions. Mm-hmm. But don't use every excuse in the book to cut down the value of a property. In
exactly.
fact, it doesn't work to your benefit either. Because it's going to show up as a, you know, you are bringing the values down that, you know, of the thing that you bought. So if you don't want to ride the market down in the short term, then you want to appreciate the value. Let the seller pay your interest rate down, or, you know, accept some credits or something like that. But protect your value. As a buyer, it benefits you. This idea of getting a deal is like riding the market psychologically down. And since the market doesn't agree with you on this, it's going to be like banging your head up against a wall, just writing offer after offer that is not going to get accepted, and being disappointed and shocked every time that there are 15 other people willing to spend more money than you on this house, where the comps clearly say the value is higher than what you estimated at. Mm-hmm. So no matter what your market excuses are, your dad told you not to because of SVB, or, you know, there's a daycare next door, or you don't understand the neighborhood, or whatever it is, if you are like cutting the value down just to try and convince yourself that it's worth less than it actually is, you're the one who loses. That is not how to win.
That's true.
As a buyer in this market.
For sure. For sure. And, you know, thinking that you're going to wait for the values to fall or something big to happen is silly, because the reality is that if something's impacting the country, guess who it's also impacting? You. You know, if the interest rates rise, guess who's also impacted? You. So
right.
it's like the prices adjust, so does your, you know, ability to pay a certain price, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, it's, yeah.
Right.
It's like people need to be realistic, and they need to know it's like, it's about getting in. Because when you're in, you have the asset that you can improve, that you can, you know, use the equity on, that you can figure out how to, you know, how to
leverage it.
Yeah, how to leverage it. You know, it's so it's yeah, it's all about getting in. That's
yeah,
where they need to like.
It is. And while these same buyers are telling me, oh, well, because of the daycare, or because of the SVB collapse, or because of this thing or that thing, you're renting $4,000 a month. You're throwing away on nothing. And yet you want to be the smart guy who tells me why it's less worth less than, you know, when what the seller spent to build it, for example. You know, and I'm like, you're the one who's losing right now. You yeah. do realize that, right?
Yeah, but you know, people, you can, especially in LA, they like to focus on their rent-controlled rent. You know, they're like, you know, we have this super low rent, we're in this great location, you know, so even though we're throwing it away, we'll double, you know, we'll like our cost of living will double, you know? And it's like, well, you know, are you, you're not getting any benefit.
That's
out
what
of
I was gonna
it,
say.
Except
when's
for
the
something
last time
over your head.
You
literally.
Got $200,000 when you changed from one rental to another.
Right,
not
think
recently.
About that.
I mean, no matter how cheap it is, it's still a net loss.
Right.
That's the bottom line.
There's no
line.
Tax benefits, you know? I mean, other
right.
than maybe writing off a home office, you know? It's like,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that buyers that win are writing realistic offers, that are acknowledging the reality of the market, that are not asking their agents who are unfamiliar with certain neighborhoods to advise them on certain neighborhoods. That's another thing that smart buyers do. If you know your agent doesn't know a particular area, one thing you could do is ask the agent that's hosting the open houses about the area. Now, we're restricted from saying demographic things, but we can tell you about new restaurants or grocery stores or, you know, the things that we can talk about, you know. But I would just say, like, do your own due diligence, you know. Mm-hmm. Drive down the street, talk to the neighbors.
Exactly.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. But if somebody's been living there for 40 years and still has a smile on his face, probably it's an all right place to live, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, could have moved a million times by now and didn't, you know.
Go to the open house. Just see who's coming in, hang out, talk to the people. Yeah. It's you'll learn so much.
Yes. And, yeah. You know, again, I don't know if it's veiled racism or if it's, I don't even know if it's just total ignorance of geography. It's actually what I think it is.
Yeah, I think people just don't know.
I think they just don't know the city and, mm-hmm. and get confused by the idea that there have been places that existed before they even knew about them mm-hmm. that have established values. Mm-hmm. Wait, what? I didn't get the memo on, you know, View Park having like multi-million dollar houses. Mm-hmm. So it must not be real. You know, it's like, no, it's been having multi-million dollar houses for a few years now, you know, mm-hmm. like decades.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there are two sides of that spectrum. I think there are the people who are like, oh my God, there's this community off of Crenshaw, you know? But there's also the people who are like, oh, I don't want to be the person pushing people out. You know?
Right.
And I actually just had someone say that to me about Jefferson Park. I'm like, I'm like, Jefferson Park is very diverse.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I haven't.
But LA in general, I feel like, diverse. Is generally diverse. Yeah. You know? Like, I mean, I have clients of all races everywhere. Literally Same. Everywhere. It's not like anyone's just specifically in a neighborhood.
Right.
Though historically people have been pushed into certain neighborhoods. Right. We're not in that space anymore. So mm-hmm. it's always interesting when I hear that too, because I'm like, you need to get rid of that thought, because diversity, you know, creates community, you know? So it's right. like, why would you be afraid of being as someone Part who can bring, you know, another perspective or,
whatever
you know,
you've got.
Whatever you've got, yeah, to another space. Mm-hmm. But that's also something that I see people hold themselves back and not consider neighborhoods that they maybe would thrive in and would love and would find awesome deals in, or things that they perceive as deals, you know?
Well, let's talk about who wins in that situation, because it's interesting. You know, there's a big banner in Leimert that's like, you know, stop gentrification. And, you know, we've had several guests on who talk about community feeling, certain communities, certain people. It's not even everybody, but it's like really of concern to certain people. So if that is the narrative, and then it keeps willing home buyers from not exploring those areas out of respect or fear of being, you know, seen as an intruder, you know, not accepted, who loses and who wins? Because to me, who loses when you accept some diversity in the workplace, for example, but not in your own neighborhood, is your values are going to remain low.
Right.
So if that's the intention, then your grandma, who is going to live off the sale of this house to buy her retirement home and give the kids some money to go to college or something, I'm just making that up.
Or not even the sale, the equity.
The equity,
you know,
right.
A refinance to finance something else, or a HELOC.
There
you know?
You go. All of that is going to be affected by that lower price. And that's not good for the people who own property. So it's like unless you're trying to artificially make the values lower under the guise of that will make it more accessible, but nobody's actually taking advantage of the lower prices, then the only people that lose are the people that currently live there and can't recognize the full value of their equity and investment. So to me, that is not a winning proposition. I think we have to accept change and embrace the beautifully diverse city that we live in. And, you know, even though we can't all be part of certain, you know, communities, like, you know, I'm not Cuban, so I can't really, like, be part of the Cuban community, you know, or whatever. It doesn't mean we can't learn things or enjoy things that are offered. This is what I love about traveling. I'm like, you know, mm-hmm. in Greece, I married a Greek at one time, but I'm not Greek. And so a lot of the cultural things – even the time they eat dinner and the food and the stuff is all very different to me. And I enjoy learning, and people are proud to share and happy to share. So I feel like there's an opportunity there.
Totally.
To share.
And I think LA has a cult, like, I think LA culture is diversity. You know, like, you know, like, people who are real Angelenos, like, you know, like, it doesn't matter what race you are. It's like, you know that the street vendors have fresh fruit. Right. And you like that shit.
Right.
You know, like,
I love that shit.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, right. In Pennsylvania, I never saw a street vendor.
No.
You know?
No.
Like, you know, it's like.
My gosh. Totally.
You know?
It's true.
Yeah.
There are some particular LA things.
Yeah.
Where you're like, that's hot. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it comes out of a melting pot of people.
Right.
You know?
And like, out of cultures willing to share.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's, there's a generosity in there that also results in, like, reward too. Like, it's a two-way street. So people can be proud, share what they have with open arms, say, look, come in and try our food, or, like, understand our point of view or whatever. It starts a dialogue. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really critical. I mean, we are modern people. We all know that we're not all one thing or the other by now. We have to get beyond everything being in a racial context, I think. That's probably not something everybody agrees with. I don't know. But in terms of housing, that's legally what is supposed to happen.
Right.
Yep.
Rising property values in certain areas, you know, I think what the guests we had in the past regarding, especially Loomert Park, like the thought was like, well, then rents will go up and some people can't afford it anymore. The cool fancy restaurants come in where folks that lived there for 30 years can't really afford to eat it. So there's that fear, right?
Right,
so
but
it's
then
a little
like,
bit of a,
yeah, but
I
like,
get it too, but obviously, yes, it's amazing to get property values up for everybody because everybody benefits, but the cost of living in those places changes.
Right.
And that is a little bit.
And then we have like Akil who like got figured out a way to like buy Degnan, you know, and keep that ownership in, there's a way to prevent that from happening.
But I'll also say, it's like, why shouldn't people have options for, you know, the dollar tacos at one place and the $20, you
tacos
know, fancy, well-presented, you know, this is where I'm going to take my date tonight space. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think people should have options. And I think it's good to have, you know, the mom and pop spaces that have been there since, you know, the 70s or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the new fresh space that's just been like renovated and cute and whatever and gives you a vibe. It's
mm-hmm.
nice to have options.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I'm just.
But, you know, but people are afraid of change.
Exactly.
Yeah. People are afraid of change. They don't like to see the spaces that have been there and that are like, you know, marks for their childhood change.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
But it's like, I remember when John and Vinny's went in. And, you know, even still, sometimes I see posts about the John and Vinny's and, you know, like what was there before, which was Yi's Chinese. And, you know, it's like a debate between people who are local who are like, they served dogs for sure. Like, it was not real food, you know? Like, no one liked Yi's Chinese. And if you did, you're disgusting, you know?
Right,
but
right,
then, you know, there are other people who are like, what are you talking about? It was the best Chinese food spot. Like, it should have stayed. And
oh,
so there's
God.
Always going to be
Vinny's,
a split.
I mean, to be fair, their food is amazing, but their customer
service. Oh, I have beef.
And their, like, situation where you have to tip, like, twice. Like,
the prices
it's too
are
expensive.
I do love their wait staff. Like, I love their wait staff.
Yeah.
I do. I really like their wait staff, but not to pay an extra 38% on top of the already high prices.
And the, like, city tax in LA is already so high.
It's
hardly affordable for anybody.
No.
Yeah. No,
that
it's
like
definitely
John Vinny's supposed to be like
your bill
nice
doubles.
Dining, but
this
damn,
is like, yeah, this is
date
like,
night dining.
This is
yeah.
date
lunch.
Night dining, like a la Mozza or Osteria or Angelini, whatever, like fan. Like,
it's fancy.
Nice,
yeah.
When it really is more like the pizza place around the corner, in my opinion. But
right.
When
exactly.
you pay,
I mean,
you're like,
well,
that's not.
It's
yeah.
a little higher level
yes.
than the pizza place around the corner, but it's not like.
I mean,
it's
they
not
do
to
make
me,
fresh
like
in-house
stuff.
Pasta. I will say that is really
I just feel like when I see that, I'm like, if that is probably ridiculously too high.
I agree with
even
that.
Even for me.
Yeah. For anyone,
for anyone
it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what
yeah,
I'm saying.
I agree with that. Yeah.
I mean, there are
people need
to
be,
made
yeah,
about
I think people need to be conscious about, like, you know, yeah, just being like obnoxiously
expensive.
That's ridiculous.
Right. Right. And then, you know, I mean, this is LA. So we also love in LA, there is a culture of paying for boutique shit. Like, I paid $4.50 for a cup of soft serve ice cream because I saw a food truck that's never usually there on Ventura yesterday. And I'm like, ooh, soft serve ice cream. Like, if he could have said $10, I would have bought it. you know, but it's like a one-off thing, you know.
You're rich.
I just wanted it.
Well, of course, but they.
But I'm just saying, like, there are boutique you had experiences a in LA. Like, I bought a pie from a place that all they do is make pies. So I'm willing to pay a premium for a high quality made pie.
It's true, because if someone's focusing on just those pies are going to be awesome.
So good. Yeah. I know. Like, there's a pudding place that just makes pudding. Like, okay, so my point is there is a culture in LA. Paris is the same way too. It has these little boutiques. Like, you get your bread from the bread place, the cheese from the cheese place, and you'll pay, you know, I love that because I'm like, you're a specialist.
Yeah, that's in Germany too.
Yeah. The bakery, so I'm not saying that without exception, you can't charge a little more if you're really great at what you do. But, you know, I think there are some things that are just kind of like over the top.
Yeah.
And that's one of them to me.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's because it's like, in addition to the prices that are already like high, you know, now you're also adding an additional service charge and then also expecting like a tip, a normal tip.
Right.
You know, so it's like
altogether. It adds a whole third to your bill.
It does. It's crazy. Yeah.
So, but anyway, just to get back to the winning buyers, any final thoughts on what it is that makes a buyer win in this market? I said being realistic about the market, like not assuming that there's a deal around the corner just because you heard some news a couple months ago. You know, finding ways to make it work too, clever. Like, don't just rely on coming up with reasons like the daycare next door or this thing or the other to try and dumb down the value of a property that you really actually love and kind of probably know that it's worth what the listing is. And I would say doing your own due diligence, not just relying on your agent who may not understand everything about every neighborhood. LA is huge and not every agent sells in every neighborhood a lot, which doesn't mean they can't be a great agent for you on the deal. But it may mean that the onus is on you, buyer, to do a little more investigation or exploration on your own before, you know, instead of asking the agent to do that on your behalf. Because really, we're not supposed to be advising on that kind of stuff. But we'll get to some of that in the agent thing. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, one of the key factors for someone to win right now is being open, you know, being open to different possibilities, different areas, you know, like work potentially, you know, I mean, not necessarily a full reno, but it's like, you know, there's no perfect house and inventory is low. There are a ton of buyers out right now. So it's like, you've gotta, you know, get creative sometimes. And, you know, you're not gonna have something that's like 100% what you want, you know, nor is the seller going to make it 100% what you want, you know, via credits or repairs or whatever, you know, because it's not that market anymore.
Right.
Where people are just gonna give, you know? So I think people have to be realistic, like you were saying, and be open, you know, and accept that there will be options that will be good for you that you can build on and then use to get to the next space, you know? And the more open you are and what you'll consider, you know, the more luck you'll have in actually like getting something.
Oh,
you know?
And also, if you're in escrow, or I should say before you write the offer, knowing that your agent, if it's an Acme agent, is going to really fight for you to get the deal, really figure out if you want it, if you get it, you know?
Yeah, true that. True that.
Because if you're still hunting while you're in escrow, that's not good. Not only is it's bad for you because you could be throwing away one bona fide opportunity to go for an opportunity that you might not get.
When you find the one, you stop looking.
Yeah, stop looking. Thank you. When you find the one, you stop looking. Say it again.
When you find the one, you stop looking.
That's just like butter to my ears.
There you go.
Put it on a sign.
And agents turn all the searches off.
Yeah,
no more daily emails.
Oh my God. Okay, so we've talked buyers. Now let's talk sellers. What sellers are winning in this market? I have my thoughts.
Realistic sellers.
The realistic sellers. Give me the realism.
I agree with that. I think people who are not, you know, again, just stuck in a different time, you know, who are really looking at where we're at right now, you know, which is recovered from like the winter time, obviously, which is always a cycle. and the beginning of this year, which was recovering from that, and last year, and the rate jumping and all the things. And now we're in a space where it's like spring has sprung and people are out, and, you know, buyers have digested that the interest rates really aren't that bad, mm-hmm. and that they can buy and that they need to buy. And, you know, but it's also not like desperate, you know, that people aren't desperate. So it's not like mid 2020 or like, you know, 2021, where it's like people were like, I have 2% rates and I just need to like buy anything. I just need right. to get anything. It's not that, you know? Mm-hmm. So like people who were, you know, like for example, flippers who, you know, maybe bought their fixer a couple years ago with a certain projection, you know, and now maybe it's not that crazy.
Not that anymore.
Yeah. They need to like bring it down.
Okay, so I think that, okay, I think that sellers who are like renovation resale artists who have been really winning a lot over the past 8 to 10 years need to always predict that there could be a market shift and budget a contingency for changes in the market into their budget, like anyway, like maybe 10%. It can take one incident or one yes. like thing to change desirability about a particular location or whatever. Totally. And a lot of times flippers are, or renovation artists are selling in areas that are very sensitive to things that could, you know, market changes, interest rates, programs falling out at like trusted lenders, like the Eagle program at First Republic. So anything can happen. So I think a prepared seller who has a long-term way of estimating his success is going to succeed, because you can say, look, I won on 9 out of 10 of these last years, so I'm going to take it on the chin in this year, and then my next project I'm going to budget better because I understand the volatility of the market. Like, I knew this time was going to come. So rookie flippers haven't been doing that, you know. Mm-hmm. they are only accustomed to this winning market and don't know how to adjust, overspend on everything, we're paying crazy amounts on hard money and putting agents in a position where, you know, no matter what we do, it's not going to get them the price, because it's not about us at the end of the day. You know, it's about the quality of the product. We know we're great at what it is that we do, and we can do our part of the job to our best ability. It's not about the agent. It's like at the end of the day, sometimes just about perception of value from a changing market.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No.
So like taking the long-term approach to realizing whether or not you need to reduce or whatever falls in line
building
with the realism.
Yeah. Building 10% realistic. Contingency. And yeah. It's funny that I have to smile, because, you know, all our flippers are, they can barely stick to their budget as is. Like, building such a contingency in, it's almost like they're going to look at us and be like, like, they're, you know, it's because they're so, most of our flippers aren't the cutthroat numbers guys. They're the emotional, I need to make it extra pretty and beautiful, and I'll just spend 10 grand on this stove because it's great for the house and it'll look so good on the marketing material, you know, to yeah. get that. It's like, it's just funny. I have to smile when you say the, you know, building in the 10%, like they barely can stick to the actual budget and make a buck on the end. Like, sometimes people don't understand how little they walk away with.
Right, yeah.
For what they're actually putting in and the stress that they have to, you know, endure in those 2 years of owning the house.
Yeah.
And so dealing true. With the workers every day and holding costs and whatever. We've been
all
over
things,
this so many times.
All the things.
All the yeah. things. And
that's
then,
true. It's like you're not,
you know,
just paying
I wish,
for the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're paying
for
all
the process.
The process. Mm-hmm. You're paying yeah. for the process. All
exactly.
the things that have gone into making that house a reality.
Yeah. But yes, so of course, the more seasoned, the more maybe numbers guys, like, okay, just add that contingency in, you'll be fine, you'll make money
yeah.
no
yeah,
matter
but,
what market you're
well,
in. But the
let's talk the
in
flip
a perfect
side,
world.
Though. Let's talk the flip side of that, which is the bad flippers who were, you know, who were like making money hand over foot in the more, you know, in the busier market when people more desperate. And we're taking
hand over
properties.
Fist?
Yeah.
Hand over foot?
Hand over foot? Hand over fist? I don't
one
know.
One of those.
Hand over something.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
No, but you know, sure. but I mean, they were raking it in whenever yeah. people just wanted
yeah.
houses because the interest rates were so low
yeah.
and mm-hmm. the competition was stiff. Mm-hmm. And now, like, those shitty flips aren't selling, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they also, you know, like if we want to look at who's successful and who's not in this market, the people who are, like, doing the least are not successful. Like, right. people are not buying that, right. you know?
That's a good point. It's like the appetite, it has gone down
yeah.
for the properties that just barely make the cut in terms yes. of aesthetics.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I think
so. That's a sweet spot somewhere.
There yeah, is a sweet the sweet spot. Spot. Yeah. That's yeah. Those are the people who win. The people who yes. figure out
who
the sweet spot.
Know how to buy it for a proper price and yeah. not spend crazy on finishes, but
right.
have a good enough product to still get that number.
Right.
It's yeah. it's a science.
Like maybe not a you know like a Bertazzoni stove, but also maybe not a KitchenAid. You know.
Right.
Maybe a Wolf. Maybe a Fisher Paykel.
Well, it depends on what you're trying to get out of yeah. it, too. I mean, I think that, like, I've seen lately, which we especially saw in Southridge, people being a bit more conservative in the way that they buy.
Right.
So the question is, can they hold on to that conservatism in their budgeting, you know?
Yeah.
And really pick and choose which repairs to make systems-wise and, you know, how to do... Like, you can splurge on certain things and be more conservative on other things and still completely make a beautiful product.
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah, there's a delicate dance there that I think, like, if you're experienced, if you've been around in the business through a few cycles, then you kind of know what adjustments you need to make and where. And
well,
you're willing
where we
to take a little, like I said, like a little hit on the chin on one, yeah. but know going into the next one mm-hmm. how to change that. But there are definitely people out there who just are doing the same things that they were doing in the previous market and expecting it to win. I'll give you yeah. an example. If I called a listing agent and their property is advertised for some amount and they have no other offers on the table and then tell me that they're going to counter me at a certain number that the seller will accept when we know we're not even... like in competition and it's several hundred thousand dollars off, my buyers will be turned off no matter what I say. No matter if I say, no, listen, I know it's a crazy approach. They're underpricing it crazy, but you know, the end value really is what they're saying. Like, look, you can look at the comps and see that's what they're saying. This is just under, they're like, if there's no other offer on the table, then I'm not gonna overpay. Like buyers are not having it.
I
so sellers, you. Agents and sellers need to change that thing that maybe worked in the past, it just does not work right now. And I hate to say it because it's never my choice to do it, but even I have had like been instructed by my seller to take that approach in the past 6 months and watched that approach fall flat on its face, my very own self.
Yeah.
I hate to say it because I don't want to be that agent. I'm not that agent on instinct, but at the end of the day, we work for our clients, you know? So if our seller says, look, this is what I want you to do, and it's not illegal, I'm have to do it, you know?
No. But the reality is, too, that it's like, but a seller, you know, unless they really have to sell, many of them don't have to sell. They can figure out something else to do with it, you know,
right.
which is what a lot of flippers have done over, like, when the market was a little funky.
Right.
You know, a lot of them, instead of selling their properties, started Airbnb-ing their properties,
peer
renting
space.
Them out, peer spacing, you know, like figuring out other ways to make money until they feel like they'll get what they want.
Right.
You know, so yeah, it's...
That's
yeah,
a good point.
People are desperate. I actually just had someone who wrote an offer on a property that has a notice of default on it, you know, and is something that... It's not renovated. It needs some work, you know, and the owner is selling, you know, and she decided she didn't want to sell. So now she's pursuing trying to figure out the, you know, the financing, I think. I don't know the full backstory because obviously they can't totally share, but that's what they have to be, right? But, you know, but she had 17 offers, I think, and she
wow.
just decided not to sell because she doesn't want to sell. She loves her house.
Wow.
You know, it's like...
Wow.
People, you know, that's the thing I think that, you know, just to kind of touch on, you know, I guess this goes back to buyers. It's like you need to be realistic because people are not
desperate to
they're
sell.
Not desperate to sell, just like you're not desperate to buy.
Right, right.
Necessarily.
Right. I mean, this is a good point, but this is why, if we want to get into it now, why good agenting matters in a changing mm-hmm. market. So even the agents have to adjust now. There are certain agent styles that are working better than other agent styles that might have worked okay in the past or at least been tolerable. So, you know, to me, agents that win right now are more communicative. Like they actually hop on phone calls. They write better cover letters. They try harder for their clients. They text me to make sure the offer was received. Like, you can see they're trying harder, mm-hmm. you know, or like they even call me to like actually have a conversation like, hey, I don't know the neighborhood that well. Can you tell me about it? You know, what would you say are the best comps? I don't love that, doing the work for the buyer's agent, but I understand that if you're trying to sell my house, like, I'm going to help you. Yeah. If you don't know it, at least you admit you don't know it, yeah. and you're yes. not doing your client a yeah. disservice by yes. pretending to know it and yeah. dumbing the price down yeah. for them and then losing the deal.
Right.
So I got to appreciate honesty, transparency. Mm. I do appreciate an agent that picks up the phone. Mm-hmm. I appreciate agents that, like, if they the buyers need an extension or there's something shifting, you know, financially for them or something like that, that they call me and like kind of like give me a heads up and don't catch me off guard. Like, there's more agenting in the agenting yeah. right now to keep the deal together.
It's the professional agenting yeah. that's yes. happening more.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that too. It's okay to say I don't know something. And we as listing agents have to work harder, but we're selling our clients' properties, so we are working harder to right. educate every buyer, every buyer's agent that doesn't know what they're looking at or right. where they are.
Or where they are. Yeah. You
know? So that's totally. It's an extra step now.
Yeah, knowing what you know, knowing what you don't know. So we're not blindly writing offers, but also paying attention to the offers that you're writing. Like I get offers where it's clear that the buyers, I don't know what was happening in the last market, if they were just letting the seller's agents on the counter like clean up their original offer or what, but you know, I'm just getting forwarded DocuSigns, you know, with no QC default contingencies. It's like, you know, the good agents are calling me and saying, hey, what's the story? What's going to get the deal done? What are the seller's expectations? Do you have any offers on the table? Are you writing any mm-hmm. offers yourself? Mm-hmm. You know, where do you think it's going to land? Da, da, da. Even though I can't always answer all of that all of the time, sometimes I'm authorized by my seller to tell them where, you know, what, like right now, for example, I have a duplex. It's being prepped for market. It's being staged next week. My client literally told me, if you have somebody who wants to buy it for $1,425, I'll sell it before we hit the market. So I'm like, okay, I'll let people know, you know? And so I'm being instructed to share that information. So I feel like, you know, I communicate that with the agents that I have relationships with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think communication is really key to winning as an agent in this market. Mm-hmm. Attitude also really matters.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I had a thought and it went.
Well, by attitude matters, I mean before, it was like sometimes I couldn't get the listing agent on the phone. Before, sometimes I felt like, I don't know, I felt like the listing agent when I was on the buy side was like, could take me for granted. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, they didn't feel like they had to talk to me at all. And I'm, you know, I don't like that. You know, I'm feeling like, look, even if you don't want to tell me anything, at least we can suss each other out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like whatever the agent version is of smelling each other's butts, you know, mm-hmm. like dogs do. Like, well, it's like, you want to hear now, me, like, you know? You can imagine how we're going to work together. You know, like, I can talk, share with you, like, my professionalism, blah, 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 you know, without patronizing, mm-hmm. you know, but like just tell you my buyers are so enthusiastic about this place, like for sure they're going to close. You know, I can like share a pitch, but you have to answer the phone and mm-hmm. you have to be receptive to like hearing me. And I feel like good agents in this market have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just important for people like agents in this market to know that it's not easy to be an agent. You know, that you have to actually work to be an agent, and you actually have to like pick up the phone, proofread your contract, you know, put right. together things in a way that lets the other agent know that you're proficient. You know, it's like yeah. there's more effort needed because now people know that things are shaky, you know, like people are flaky, you know, like, you know, people are writing offers that they don't necessarily stand behind, you know, but it really requires someone who's competent to get the deal through, because yeah. we're educating everyone constantly, the clients, the appraisers, the lenders, everyone.
Yeah,
everyone's in a different space depending on how involved they are in the market.
Let's talk really about the appraiser thing, because you know that's another thing that prior to this market, there were definitely some sellers agents who just would let the appraisers let themselves in, and I don't think they were giving appraisal packages, and the value was just there. Now, I've seen in the past like 4 months, I've seen appraisals note that the property's in a depreciating area for values. Yep, I know. Wow. Like, really? That was in the valley. I've seen appraisers note that a property is close to a freeway. Never seen that before. So I feel like, you know, only one time on my desert listing did I have an appraiser not appreciate our appraisal package and send me this like weird 3 o'clock in the morning, all caps email message. I'm never going to use your comps. I'm like, okay. Just trying to help. Totally trying to help. But only once has that really happened.
That's
usually
crazy.
I'm explaining to the appraisers why people are moving to this area, what it is that we're seeing on the ground in the market, why things are valued a certain way, why people care about the ADUs in, you know, this area, for example, because it's highly desirable, because it's a central location and people can get east to west and like these are renting really well and but I don't know, whatever. I need to share all of the improvements that the seller's done to the property and, you know, whatever. I sell the house, you know, and make sure the appraiser has everything he needs, whether he accepts it or not, to make the most informed appraisal. And I feel like that's something that we used to have to do before the market was hot. We never stopped doing as Acme mm-hmm. agents, but, you know, definitely that needs to be there for, and that's a behind the scene thing. So you don't get any glory for that until it comes in. You know, until the appraisal comes in at value.
It's a personal glory.
It's a personal
yeah.
glory.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah, it is a great thing.
That's like one of my favorite calls.
Yeah.
Did it come in at value? Yes.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, but that's something that like you do, you're working behind the scenes. Your client doesn't know that you're doing that as part of your job. They just think it's kind of like magic. It's like, not magic.
No, it's a little
magic. It's good agent thing. Yeah. I mean, I think that also being honest and also communicating like honest expectations to your clients is really important for good agents, whether it's on the buy side or the sell side. So what I'm learning now about this market is that there are some properties that look pretty good that have been on the market for a while, and it doesn't mean anything is wrong with them. It means that the seller wasn't willing to come down in the price because the seller is holding to their value. And if their value is actually good value, then there's no harm in paying, you know, the price that would get you the house. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, as long as it appraises and you can get financing on it and whatever, just because the seller's not willing to come down doesn't mean that the house isn't worth having or something. Mm-hmm. So I'm like letting sellers know if they're sitting at the top of the market, like it might take a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And if they're willing to wait it out, then, you know, we are too. You know, like we're behind you. We understand mm-hmm. the value too. You know, and there will be a right buyer who makes a reasonable offer that will get accepted. It just might not be in 2 weeks or whatever, you know. So
yeah,
communicating accurate expectations to the yeah. sellers and to the buyers. Like, look, you guys can throw a lowball offer out. Doesn't mean the seller's going to go for it. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we got a Brinhurst offer at like 1.5 or something. It's like, what?
Throwing it at the wall to see if it sticks. That's
I mean, it's like, come
on. Insulting.
I always love to get those, like, you know, those like random offers that like land in your inbox, like after you know you haven't shown it yet,
right?
And it's just some random, like, you know, offer $500,000 off the list price. Like, I bet you will love to get it for this price. Yeah. Me too. I buy it then.
Yeah, right.
And resell it right now
with like a thing on the bottom. With, you know, let's open escrow.
Yeah,
right.
Like, we're not doing anything.
Yeah,
right. Or when they send a really low offer and then text me like, I just sent an amazing offer.
Yeah. Me?
Wait, what? Yeah. $200,000 under list, you know?
Oh my God.
Come on. I mean, you know, or when the agent, other agent is arguing with me about value, I don't like that either.
I hate
that.
I'm
like, look, I'm not the one. Or like an agent coming in to the open house and arguing the neighborhood and the value down to their client in front of other buyers at the open house, that just turns me completely off. Yeah. I'm like, you gotta have some respect, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just not cool.
Yeah, and definitely.
And learn how to, like, know where you're going. So don't go into an open house and say the name of the neighborhood wrong.
Oh my God.
Just know where you are before you get there, please.
Yeah, totally. There was an agent that interviewed that didn't know how to pronounce a particular neighborhood's name. you know, like we have like Los Feliz, you know, da da. Like, you don't know how to say the name. I'm telling you what the name, how to pronounce it. And she's like, well, it doesn't matter. I speak a bunch of languages, so it doesn't matter. I'm like, the people who live in the neighborhood,
it matters to them,
you know, that you have some respect for the neighborhood name, you know, it means something.
And this has nothing to do with the other.
Yeah. Know that if you're, especially if you're going to come in and try and talk shit, you better at least know how to pronounce the neighborhood name. Come on. Or the street name for that matter. You know what I mean? Another thing is, I saw in something, it was like a strategy, like just write like fewer, like write 25 days, not 30 for close of escrow, and then just extend it once you get in, or like play nice before you get to inspections and then play hardball on inspections.
Oh my God.
I'm like, no. Oh my God. No. Now I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Now I know your game.
Now I know your game. That, when I saw that, I thought the exact same thing. I thought, now I know.
Now I know.
I mean, I would have guessed, but I also know I know.
I mean, that to me is really bad advice. I am honest in everything. Like, I've had vendors say, do you want me to fluff the inspection?
Oh, God, no.
You?
Yes.
Yeah, invoices, like, how, like, why sewer would line guys and stuff like that.
As if people haven't received a million f***ing...
Yeah, but plus, it also tells me something about you, vendor.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll never trust any invoice from you ever again. Yep. If it's not coming from, like, if another agent sends it from you, I know you fluffed it.
Yep. Exactly.
That's
totally,
just
completely.
So, such bullcrap.
Yeah. And I've had clients, like, not recently, but, you know, in the past, ask me, like, should we ask them to increase the price of the offer so we have more negotiating power? I'm like, no, never. To me, I want to show the other agent that we're only asking for what the true cost of the repair actually is. And so we only work with, like, trusted vendors. But when I see that or hear that, or, you know, when I receive a bid that, you know, is, like, completely inflated, I'm like, I don't trust the agent, I don't trust the vendor, and I'm like, that's not the way to negotiate. To me, it's not that you play nice and then you're horrible and request for repairs. Play nice because you are nice, if you are nice, because if you fuck this deal up, I'm not going to want to work with you on the next one. And if I have a choice, I might say to my agents, look, I did this deal with these people and they completely, you know, left a bad taste in my mouth and misled us and intentionally did all this shit, and, you know, as opposed to these people who are great and honest and da-da-da. I mean, reputation matters, right? So I'm like, that's very short-sighted.
It's all what you have to go for.
Yeah, and it's the same thing reputation. You're going to tell the seller.
That's
you
what
know?
I'm saying.
Yeah, like, yeah, you're going to be communicating exactly how that went and what they can expect.
Right.
And it could totally sway whether or not they get their offer accepted on the next thing. It's just like, yeah. You have to know you're gonna run into people. It's not. It's like a big city, but it's a small town.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this business is like.
And that's just what it is. It's like the law of attraction or something. Like,
oh yeah, when you think you're not gonna.
You always run. Like, it's just, it's cosmic guidance is what it. That's the word. You always run into that same person, and you think it's just like, oh well, oops, here we are again.
Yeah.
It just totally. Is what it is. It's funny.
It is a funny thing. Yeah. Yep. So what goes around comes around. Any final thoughts on who wins in this market?
Any final thoughts?
Just be above board.
Do that. Be above board.
Just be above board.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just be cool. Be cool.
Honesty, flexibility, realism.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. I think realism, that's the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you're in LA. Like, so let's be real about that. You know, there's like constant demand here, you know, and there's never enough inventory because most people stay in their houses. I mean, you know, there's a turnover, but, you know, you have a lot of people who've been there for decades.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, you've got to figure out how to be creative. You've got to be open. You've got to, whenever you do get in the market, you know, be fair, be thoughtful, be real with your agent, be real with the sellers. Like,
be real.
Yeah.
Be real. Mm-hmm. From our lips to your ears, we'll see you on the next episode of Under All Is the Land. Toodles.
Do for yourself. Add a couple notches to your belt. Under All Is the Land. Under All.